You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we chat this Wednesday evening, it's an off day for the Rockets. In Game 5 Tuesday night, they punched their ticket to the Western Conference Finals. As expected, later Tuesday night, so did the Golden State Warriors. So the matchup we've speculated about all season long, it is coming to fruition. Rockets-Warriors Western Conference Finals starting next Monday night in Houston. Got a lot of days ahead because of the six-day layoff between series to talk about those matchups, and we certainly will. I'm in the process of lining up some pretty good interviews for the remainder of this week and weekend to get you guys prepped for that. But today, with so much of a layoff between the two series, and not just in terms of the games on the floor, but even off, the Rockets are taking today and tomorrow off entirely. Friday, they'll report back to Toyota Center and start practicing and beginning their game prep. With so much time off, it's important, I think, especially with both Chris Paul and James Harden at times in the playoffs seeming to have moments in which they were not 100%. It's important to get those guys the rest that they have earned by taking care of business in both of the first two series, winning 4-1 against Minnesota in the first round, Utah in the second round. And while certainly you want to get them ready mentally, physically, from an X's and O's standpoint to battle maybe the most talented team in the history of the NBA in the Warriors, also a big part of being physically ready is being in optimal condition, which can mean rest, especially after a grueling 5-game series. Yes, it was just 5 games, but playing the Jazz, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, Quinn Snyder's defense, it's like a root canal. So I think the Rockets are definitely going to enjoy these 2 days off and then get back to business starting Friday, getting ready for Monday night's Game 1 against the Warriors. We'll have much more commentary on Rockets versus Warriors in the days ahead. We'll explore it from so many angles. I feel like we've been discussing it for a while because it seemed inevitable, but now that it's officially set, we'll go into it in even more depth, which I know you guys expect of us here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the Rockets. But with today having a bit of time off, I wanted to take a step back and do something a little different. And I get a lot of, I call them FAQs, frequently asked questions on Twitter, at Ben Dubose throughout the day, especially in the Rockets playoffs, because a lot of you guys have interest. And, of course, we always talk about a lot of them in the context of who is playing, the playoff rotations, those types of things. With today being an off day entirely, I wanted to address the elephant in the room, I should say the $20 million elephant in the room, about a guy who is not playing, and that's Ryan Anderson. He came back in Game 3 of the Minnesota series, actually after missing the final couple of weeks of the season with a sprained ankle, was 4 of 6 from 3 in his first game back, but unfortunately that was a loss for the Rockets, lost by 16, then progressively played fewer minutes the ensuing games, and starting in Game 3 of the Utah series, these final three, it was clear that he was out of the rotation altogether. The only minutes he got were down the stretch of the fourth quarter in Game 3, a game which the Rockets led by as much as 38 points. So in today's show, I'm going to discuss first how that came to be and why I personally don't think that it necessarily proves that he is out of the rotation for good on this playoff run, but also spinning it forward, what has this season done to his value? What does the Ryan Anderson market and the landscape for him look like in this summer as well as in the years ahead? Because if he is not moved, I still think there's a viable path that he could be a contributor to the Rockets in the years ahead. First things first, let's discuss what's going on here and now, because everything is about the 2018 team. When you're in the NBA's Final Four and you're 8 games away from winning the first title in 23 years, that's what it's about. As far as why Ryan was pulled from the rotation, I think it's less about his physical limitations as far as athleticism, and I think it's more to do with execution. And I know that's a little shocking, because when you think Ryan Anderson, you think of a stretch for a guy who the balance of his career is a 38% three-point shooter, and you would think that if anything, the weakness, he turned 30 years old this week, has been his declining athleticism. Well, I don't think that's the reason that he is not playing, because for the Rockets, where he would play, especially now that he's lost his starting role, began the year as a starting power forward, then was usurped in mid-February by P.J. Tucker, would be at the backup 5 spot. Well, it's not that a 35-year-old Nene is a much more athletic than Ryan Anderson. The difference is that Nene's skill set is more stable in terms of his back-to-the-basket game, his ability to roll to the rim, his passing, especially against a Utah team that seemingly always has at least one of Rudy Gobert or Derek Favors out there over five games. You could play Nene, and at times, his ability to get you easy buckets around the rim is useful. For example, in Game 5, the closeout game, the Rockets eventually made a lot of threes, but the first quarter, I think they missed their first seven. They couldn't throw it in the ocean. But Nene made his first shots, first three shots for 6 points. And that was a big point in how the Rockets in the first quarter, they got out of it 21-16, even though they couldn't throw the ball in the ocean. And Nene, offensively, he can still be very viable. The question is, defensively, at 35 years old, how can he hold up? Well, against the Jazz, Rudy Gobert, Derek Favors, you can mitigate some of Nene's defensive limitations, and he brings you just enough offensively that, especially compared to a Ryan Anderson that is not confident. With Ryan, it's not just that he's missing threes, it's that he's not taking them. I think that's what made Nene the play. Now, against the Warriors, I think it's going to be different. The Warriors seem to have moved to this Hampton five lineup, and even off the bench, they're not really playing the traditional centers, guys like Zaza, David West, much at all. So I think that limits how much you can play Nene. Also, in the regular season, the last time the Rockets and Warriors played, and the Rockets won that game by 8 at Toyota Center in late January, Ryan Anderson played 30 minutes and had a team-high 13 rebounds. He was a big part of what the Rockets did in that game. Now, he was back in rhythm then, in a way that he is not now. I'm not naive to that, certainly. That is a real factor. With Ryan, what people forget is that being a three-point shooter, and this is something that I spoke with Matt Bullard about, current Rockets play-by-play analyst on television broadcast during the season on AT&T Sportsnet Southwest, and of course a stretch four back in his day. And for a guy like Ryan, who plays from the perimeter, it's tougher to just get suddenly back into rhythm than maybe for a power player like Nene. So when you factor in the injuries, not just the sprained ankle that cost him the first two playoff games in the last 2 weeks or so of the regular season, but also the hip flexor that he suffered in early March, I think all of you guys remember when he went to the bench roll and suddenly we saw a fly on Ryan Anderson, the guy throwing down poster dunks over Alex Len, pirouetting in that game. When was it? I believe it was in Denver late in February or early in March. And I don't know if that's directly what suffered the hip flexor, but probably not too coincidental. It's tougher for Ryan in terms of his shooting to immediately jump back into form. And so he's been a little tentative. And as long as that's the case, especially if Nene is the option, is the alternative, then they're going to go with a guy in Nene who's a little bit more stable. Golden State, it's different because I don't think Nene is as playable defensively. They could go with Ryan, but it's not a given. It's very possible against Golden State that they might not play either Ryan Anderson or Nene. We saw last night they have not done the Tuck Wagon lineups with PJ Tucker as the backup center all that often, but they did try it, for example, in the final 150 of Game 5 against the Jazz. The first half, they went on that 11-3 run. We know the Rockets went Tuck Wagon a lot in the regular season in those matchups against the Warriors, so it wouldn't surprise me if they pull that out more. And if they do, then maybe if you're playing PJ Tucker more at the five, then it's not Ryan Anderson or Nene at all. Maybe you're boosting minutes for guys like Gerald Green, maybe even a random Joe Johnson signing from here and there to fill out the minutes at the forward spots, so better be going otherwise be going to PJ. So we'll have to wait and see. But it's not like those options are perfect either. We know Gerald Green's defensive limitations. We know Joe Johnson at 36 is not the player he's been through most of his career. So it's not like there's an easy answer either way, which is what leads me to believe at some point Ryan Anderson is going to get a look, especially with 6 days in between series and a chance for him to be in the gym with his teammates this weekend, get back into rhythm, some, I would say, less stressful practices in which you're less worried about just getting ready for a game tomorrow. You can actually execute some team-specific, bigger-picture planning. It would not surprise me if Ryan Anderson plays. But ultimately, I do think if he does, it's going to be at the center spot, because the issue for the Rockets, it's not that Ryan has to be a center at 30 years old. I'm aware that last year he was a very successful, let's keep that in mind, starting power forward on a team that won 55 games and went to the second round of the playoffs. I don't think his athleticism has eroded that much in 12 months. The issue, and Mike D'Antoni has said this before, Ryan Anderson's numbers are very passable as a four if he's playing with Clint Capela. The reason for this is that the Rockets defensively, their scheme is built around switching, and you don't want more than one liability defensively on the court at a given time. Now, Ryan, in one-on-one play, is not as much of a liability as you might think. He's actually graded out fairly decently this year, but he's certainly not a strength. Let's be real about that. His athletic limitations, especially guarding perimeter players one-on-one when he gets switched onto them, they are significant. It's something that other teams, including the Warriors, would want to exploit. Well, you can survive with one player like that. The problem is that if Ryan Anderson comes off the bench and plays the four, then who's going to play the five? It's probably going to be Nene, and Ryan Anderson and Nene just do not work well because that's two of your five players who you cannot really trust on switches. And then if Gerald Green is playing as well, which is very possible with bench lineups, just imagine a lineup in which three of your five players defensively are Gerald Green, Ryan Anderson, and Nene. The entire thing is going to break down. It's unplayable. So in an ideal world, Ryan would start or play alongside Clint Capela, but of course Clint is going to start, and P.J. Tucker is so valuable that you're obviously better off with him starting. So Ryan off the bench, it's not that he can't play the four. The problem is that the most likely pairing, if he did, because of the way minutes are staggered, would be Nene, but Ryan Anderson and Nene together don't really work. So that's why I go back to saying it's not so much an issue of his physical decline in terms of Ryan is too slow to play the power forward spot and he's too slow to play the Warriors. It's not so much that. It's more the execution that, if he's going to play, especially at the five, he needs to be not just making threes, but not tentative at all, being aggressive. And right now, coming off not just the sprained ankle, but the hip flexor as well, he only played a couple of weeks of action in the final 2 months of the year, and he just does not seem, has not in the playoffs, other than that Minnesota game, and that largely came in the fourth quarter when the Rockets were losing by as much as, I think, 19 points, so, and ended up losing by 16. So it hasn't really been in a high-stress situation, and so that's why it's tough on the fly to put a guy back in your playoff rotation. They might have an opportunity to with 6 days off between now and the Warriors. We'll have to see exactly what route Mike D'Antoni takes. I'm sure we'll get some answers. He won't tip his hat fully, but we'll at least get some indication when he meets with the media starting Friday when they get back to practice. But either way, Ryan Anderson, even if he does not return, keep in mind, as I mentioned, he's a $20 million a year player. He signed for two more years after this one, which a lot of Rockets fans do not like, and I understand why. He's certainly not giving you $20 million worth of production, because that would rank him behind only Chris Paul and James Harden in terms of salary on this Rockets team, and he is certainly nowhere near your third most impactful player. So I get the concerns, but all that said, the reasons that he is not playing now, which predominantly, as I said, had to do with just a couple of fluke injuries and being out of rhythm, by and large, he's still a very similar guy to the guy who was impactful as your starting power forward on a 55-win team a year ago. And I think with continuity and more confidence, it's very possible he could be a rotation player next year as your backup five, or even in some circumstances, playing the four, depending on maybe you have a different playoff, a different backup five. I actually think that Brandon Wright, if not for his injury, you might could play Ryan Anderson and Brandon Wright together. I think that might have been the idea for the Rockets in the playoffs originally. That's where I was going with that, because Brandon Wright is the kind of guy who can switch, and so you could play Ryan and Wright in a way that you can't play Ryan and Nene. Unfortunately, Wright's knee was a problem. They had to let go of that dream early. So maybe next year, if you have a backup five that's more flexible than Nene, then you also have options to still play Ryan at the four. We'll have to wait and see, but that's why I'm not giving up on Ryan Anderson. It's not just about this next series, even though that's certainly most important right now. He's also potentially a part of your future in the next 2 years as well. And that leads into the second segment of our Ryan Anderson FAQ episode, which is going to be about where things go from here. I think it's very important not to write him off, because Ryan Anderson, as I mentioned, a guy who started, played nearly 30 minutes a game just a year ago, 12 months, on a basketball team that won 55 games in the Western Conference and advanced to the second round of the playoffs. That's not easy to do. And his spacing, not just a 38% shooter, but an ability to go out to 27, 28 feet, that is very valuable to guys like James Harden and Chris Paul. And you shouldn't forget about it. Now, I understand he's making $20 million a year. I get it. He is overpaid. But I think it is very important when we're looking at the future of Ryan Anderson in Houston to separate Ryan Anderson the contract from Ryan Anderson the basketball player. And here's why. Whether Ryan Anderson is making $20 million or $1 million does not mean anything in terms of the Rockets' likelihood of beating the Golden State Warriors 4 times out of 7. It just doesn't. The only way it means something is if you're Tillman Fertitta, which I'm pretty confident most of you are not, and you're paying the checks. Otherwise, his direct salary does not and should not matter to you. Yes, he is overpaid for his production, and I guess it's fine to be annoyed about that. But in terms of building a contender, it is not prohibitive to you unless it is keeping you from doing something else. With the current Rockets and the way they are constructed, that's not the case. Because let's be real, the Rockets, there is no end of the season, even if they're swept by the Warriors, that's going to lead to a radical reconstruction of this team this summer. They had the best record in the regular season, 65-17, franchise record. And they've now won 8 of 10 playoff games. Folks, beating Minnesota and Utah at an 800 clip through the first two rounds of the playoffs, that's not easy at all. And yet that's what the Rockets are doing. They have already shown you enough, regardless what happens against the Warriors, that they're going to bring back or attempt to the heartbeat of this team. And to keep this group together, which means Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella, Luke Bamute as free agents, the cap holds for Chris Paul and Trevor Ariza, it's not as big for Clint Capella, but certainly he's going to get close to a max deal. The point is, the Rockets are not going to be an under-the-cap team regardless. So if Ryan Anderson's contract just disappeared tomorrow, it still would not matter in terms of giving you more flexibility this summer, because assuming you plan on keeping Chris Paul, Ariza, Clint Capella, you're going to be over the cap regardless. So I've seen talk about, well, only if you could move him into cap space, if you could buy him out. There is no reason to do that unless you think he is a net negative as a basketball player, which I don't. We've seen last year, and even it stretches this year. I mentioned the last time they beat the Warriors. He played 30 minutes and had a game-high 13 rebounds. He was a big part of what the Rockets did in that last January win, 116-108, over Golden State at Toyota Center. Unless you think he is a net negative basketball player, which I do not, especially when healthy, then there's no reason to move him just because of the contract, because even if you move the contract, you're still going to be over the cap unless you just radically reconfigure this roster. And at this point, with the Rockets in the Western Conference Finals, the league's Final Four, that's just not going to happen. The Rockets, regardless what happens this series, they might try and add on to it. We know Daryl Morey will swing big and go after the likes of LeBron James and Paul George, but in terms of the foundation of this team that went 65-17 during the regular season and 8-2 so far in the playoffs, he's going to keep that together. And if that's the case, then there's no reason to move Ryan Anderson just to move him. In fact, he's actually more useful to you in terms of pursuing LeBron James or Paul George than if he were gone. Because the only way with the Rockets going to be capped out for the foreseeable future, an over-the-cap team, just to keep it together, the Rockets are going to be in major luxury tax territory to give Capella his new near-max deal, and then Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, the deals we all anticipate those guys to get. The only way you're going to be getting LeBron James or Paul George, or even in the ballpark for them, is via trade, specifically via an opt-in and trade, the same way they got Chris Paul last June, because, of course, that would allow the Rockets to still exceed the, not be hard capped. If they were to do a sign and trade in July, I believe David Weiner, Beam of Thug on Twitter can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that would subject them to the hard cap, which would make it very difficult to make the math work. So the most reasonable way for the Rockets, if they want to acquire another star this summer, would be an opt-in and trade. And to do that, Paul George, LeBron, somebody else, whoever it may be, you're going to have to send out anywhere from probably $25 to $35 million in salary. Well, the easy name that would go out if you're going to pursue a big name this summer would be Eric Gordon. He's making about $13 million a year for the next 2 years. He's only 30 years old. It's a pretty good contract. He's better for Oklahoma City or Cleveland than getting nothing and watching LeBron or Paul George leave for zero compensation. But that's only $13 million. How do you bridge the rest of the gap to get somewhere, say, $25 to $35 million? The easiest way to do it would be including that $20 million salary from Ryan Anderson and sending that to a third team, and the third team would probably send an expiring contract. What I've come up with, scenarios I've thrown out, would be maybe sending Ryan Anderson to Phoenix, and then Phoenix trading some combination of Jared Dudley, Tyson Chandler, Alan Williams. Phoenix has a number of contracts that expire next year, and then, of course, in exchange for Phoenix taking Ryan, a guy who has 2 years on his contract instead of one, they'd probably get one or two first-round draft picks from the Rockets in exchange for their participation on that. But Ryan, I would argue that his salary is actually a positive for the Rockets, because if he wasn't there, the only way you could even get in the ballpark for a trade for Paul George, LeBron, because you're not going to get him in free agency, there's no way to get under the cap, then, or no reasonable way, I should say, you'd have to be trading P.J. Tucker, Nene, you'd have to be cutting into the heartbeat of your current team, which is something the Rockets would ideally prefer doing as much as possible. I think Eric Gordon, unfortunately, he would have to be the guy that goes for a lot of reasons. That's the only way to make the math work. But I think we'd all agree Ryan Anderson, while a positive player, is he as valuable as P.J. Tucker? No. But if Ryan's salary is not there, then the only way you can go after one of those guys would be eating directly into the heartbeat of this team. P.J. Tucker, Nene, guys like that on top of Eric Gordon. So I would actually argue that Ryan, if you're able to move him, and I think you can, is actually more valuable on your books than if you could theoretically amnesty him and ditch your salary altogether, because there's nothing you'd be able to replace that space with anyway because you're capped out. Now, this is conditional on being able to move him, but I think you're going to be able to do that if push comes to shove. I know they struggled too last summer during the Carmelo Anthony negotiations, but there's some reasons for that. First, last summer there were 3 years left on the contract. This year there are two. That's a huge, huge, enormous difference, and especially if you're willing to take back an expiring contract and in a three-way scenario, it'd be another team. Essentially, that's just 1 year difference to the team that's participating in the trade with you. So there are going to be more options from that standpoint. And beyond that, the Rockets also, he is a net negative contract as an asset. I understand that. But the Rockets will now, once this year's draft passes, they will be able to trade. They will have all of their first-round picks moving forward, which means they could trade a pick in 2019. That's the very next draft. And 2021. You can't trade picks in back-to-back years because of league rules. And that's what hurt them last summer, was because to get this Chris Paul trade done, they had to give up the 2018 first-round draft pick. Well, because of that, you couldn't trade another first-round pick until 2020. And back in July 2017, a first-round pick in 2020 and maybe 2022, that's just not very attractive. That's way too far away. There's way too many things that can happen. The Rockets going to be a much better place this summer to sweeten a deal for someone taking Ryan Anderson. And also, taking his contract is not going to be nearly as cost-prohibitive, because the years are going to be two left instead of three. And yes, you can point out that Ryan Anderson's play has declined this year relative to last. Maybe it's just related to health and the fact that, by the way, let's be real, the Rockets, as good as they are, there's a bar to cross to play on a team as good as the Rockets, 65 wins, now 8-2 in the playoffs, that would not be there for the rest of the NBA. So just because Ryan Anderson has a tough time cracking the current Rockets rotation, it doesn't mean he couldn't be valuable somewhere else. But last summer, even though his numbers were better, it was always about the contract. So with his numbers being a little bit worse, I don't expect teams to say, well, I would have considered him if he was coming off of the 2017 resume, but not the 2018 one. No, for a team taking Ryan Anderson, it would never be fully about Ryan Anderson, the basketball player, because he's a net negative on that contract regardless. It would predominantly be about, are you getting enough sweetener? And in my opinion, the Rockets having more first-round picks that they can throw in to a deal, and the fact that there's only 2 years left on Ryan's deal instead of three, it's much more reasonable to move Ryan this summer if the right proposition comes to you, as opposed to last summer, even though he was a better basketball player back then. I know that may sound like convoluted logic, but when you think of what a team like, say, Phoenix, Brooklyn, whoever it may be that you're offloading them to, when you think of what their goals are, I do believe it's going to be different this summer. Now, again, I'm not saying move him just to move him. I'm just saying he can be a valuable piece in terms of making the economics add up in a trade that nets you LeBron James or Paul George. If you can sell those guys, work behind the scenes the same way they undoubtedly did on Chris Paul last June on coming to Houston. I understand that that's not the goal now. The goal now is to beat the Warriors 4 times out of 7 and then win the NBA Finals in the next round. That's certainly on the forefront of everyone's Rockets minds right now. I understand that. But moving forward, I don't see a case to jettison Ryan Anderson just to ditch him, because I do think potentially, for the reasons we discussed in the first segment, even if it's not next round, he could be a viable rotation player for you, potentially even your backup five in the next 2 seasons that he's under contract. And your ability to use his salary in trades is a lot better than, say, if he just didn't exist, and then you wouldn't have that salary filler to make math work. So that's why, in my opinion, I understand that Ryan Anderson, the contract, is a net negative. Ryan Anderson, the basketball player, is not. So between the fact that you can use his salary in trades and the fact that otherwise you do have a hole at backup center that he could potentially fill, there's no reason to move him just to move him. I get the frustration. He's making $20 million a year. He's not giving you nearly $20 million a year worth of production, but ultimately he's going to be on this team unless there's a clear way to upgrade using his salary. Otherwise, unless you're Tillman Fertitta, and again, most of you guys are not, there's no reason to worry that much. It's not your money. Just enjoy the fact that even if he's overpaid, he can still help your basketball team. And perhaps, even if it's not in a trade, he can still be that guy, a solid rotation player in the NBA, even in his early 30s. He was for a lot of this year, and certainly last year, on a 55-win team before some of the injuries struck. So I would urge patience. It's frustrating, but there's reason to think that he could help you acquire a big name this summer. And if he can't, then there's reason to think that he could be a rotation player in the years ahead, his age 31 and age 32 seasons at least, before his contract expires in the end of June 2020. Now, the last thing I want to mention on Ryan before we close up today's show is why he was brought in the first place. Because I hear a lot of talk. I actually had Brian Geltzeiler, the Hoops critic on Twitter, on my show last week, and he mentioned that the Ryan Anderson contract continues to bite the Rockets in the rear end. I don't necessarily think that's true. Because as I mentioned, number one, this summer, and again, I respect Brian's insight, a great guy, and while he's right that's a negative contract, you also have to think in terms of the Rockets, what would they do with that space otherwise? And I don't really see that much out there. Now, perhaps this summer, if they had cap room, you'd rather reallocate that $20 million, but as I mentioned, because of the cap holes with Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella, that's not really a reasonable path. I don't think the Rockets really regret the Ryan Anderson contract. First, you have to consider that four-year, $80 million deal in July 2016, the headwinds the Rockets were facing at the time. They were 41-41 that prior season when they went into it with championship expectations, coming off a Western Conference Finals berth. Mike D'Antoni was widely viewed as an underwhelming hire, especially for a team whose main problems seemed to be on the defensive end. Everyone questioned James Harden's leadership at the time. Dwight Howard, say what you will about him now, but he was considered a star, and people knew he was leaving. The Rockets going into July 2016, they tried to get a meeting with Kevin Durant, who was good friends with James Harden. They tried to get a free agency meeting with Durant. He did not even let them meet with him. That's how down the Rockets were seen at the time. They got a meeting with Al Horford, who, after Durant, was probably the top free agent on the market. And they didn't even make Horford's top three. Allegedly, that ended up being Boston, Washington, and Atlanta. The Rockets, it's easy to forget based on how positive last year ended up, and then certainly this season, but we're less than 2 years removed from when there were serious concerns about the Rockets as a franchise, the leadership, James Harden. And by the way, Harden's contract was going to expire in the summer of 2018 at the time, and there were questions about whether the Rockets had given him enough reason to stick around. There were so much uncertainty back with the Rockets in those days. And yes, it turns out that the things they did back then, starting with the hire of Mike D'Antoni, were brilliant. Kudos to Daryl Morey and Tad Brown. Back then, owner Leslie Alexander, the decisions they made were great. We didn't know it then. And in the short term, the Rockets needed a first domino. Ryan Anderson was that first domino. A few hours after they secured Ryan Anderson, they got Eric Gordon, who was his teammate in New Orleans. Gordon has undoubtedly been a very good player for the Rockets, nearly an all-star level at times, and I've mentioned he's the variable. He's the guy who could give you enough offense to compete with the Warriors. Gordon signed after Anderson did, and he cited the comfort he had with Ryan from his days in New Orleans. By the way, one thing I should have mentioned about Ryan when talking about playing him against the Warriors, not only was he successful the last game of this season against Golden State, you go back to the New Orleans playoff series a few years back, I think it was 2015 against the Warriors, both Ryan and Eric, but especially Ryan, were very, very good in that series. So maybe Ryan is playable in a good matchup against the Warriors. As I said, I don't think his athleticism is the reason he wasn't playing in the first place, especially when you consider that Nene has probably been the beneficiary of minutes that we thought going into the playoffs would probably have been ticketed for Ryan. Anyway, getting back to the July 2016 scenario. First, Ryan signed. Eric signed a few hours later. Nene signed a couple of days later. Signing Ryan and then Eric made it clear that the Rockets, they were a place for veterans. People did not know the direction the Rockets were going at 41-41. Well, that made it clear that the Rockets were spending aggressively. They wanted to turn this thing around. That's what drew Nene. And Nene was a huge part of the Rockets' success his first year, especially in getting the playoff series from the Thunder. I don't think the Rockets beat the Thunder in round one last year without Nene. And then a couple of days after Nene signed, after Ryan, Eric and Nene all in a week, then that's when James Harden signed the extension, the first extension that added an extra year onto his contract. Then what happened? All three of those guys, Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon, Nene, they all played big roles in a team that overachieved, beat all expectations, won 55 games, got to the second round, and that's what puts you in position to trade for Chris Paul, to have Chris Paul maybe one of the top 10 most desirable players, certainly I would say, in the entire NBA, decide that he wanted to come to Houston, then for Harden to sign away basically the remainder of the prime of his career, and then to have veterans, great players that are doing amazing things for you now, like P.J. Tucker and Luke Bamute come at a discount. All of that happened because of the narrative set in place by the 2016-2017 Rockets overachieving and winning 55 games. All the great things they did last offseason, the Harden extension, getting Chris Paul, getting P.J. Tucker and Luke Bamute on sweetheart deals, it was all put in place because of the narratives that were established by what the Rockets did starting in the offseason of 2016. Well, those dominoes in 2016, it all started with getting Ryan Anderson to sign on the bottom line. They needed someone to say yes. And once he did, and yes, he's overpaid, and that's just the reality, especially big men, just ask the Lakers and Timothy Mozgov, they get overpaid in today's NBA. Once Ryan signed on the bottom line, it was like the dam broke. You got the other veterans, Gordon and Nene. It was easier to sell James Harden on his future, so he signed the extension. And all of a sudden, the chemistry, it rolls better. Let's give Mike D'Antoni some credit, too. The Rockets, an organization, they ignored all the noise about D'Antoni, an offensive-minded coach for a team that had problems on defense. The Rockets deserve credit, too. But in terms of the players on the current team, Ryan Anderson was the big domino that fell first. And then everything else fell in line. And let's not act like he's been a terrible player. He was a starter. His floor spacing, enormous. I know, you know, at 13-5, which is good enough in and of itself, a guy playing nearly 30 minutes a night on a 55-win team in the West. But in addition to that, his floor spacing, all the articles we've written about what he does, the gravitational pull, shooting out to 27, 28 feet, that stuff is very real. He's been a big success on the basketball floor, too. So, yes, he's overpaid, but I would argue that in addition to remembering that he's a perfectly quality basketball player, let's not look at the current Rockets, which can draw players like P.J. Tucker and Luke Bamute on huge discounts, and act like Daryl Morey was just taking crazy pills when he signed Ryan Anderson to this four-year, $80 million deal. The Rockets were in a much worse place back then. And to take the step forward that they ultimately did, they had to overpay Ryan Anderson. They had to get him on that bottom line. And so even if he's overpaid, Ryan Anderson, in my opinion, has still very much served his purpose. And his signing has been very, very impactful in a positive way on the Rockets, even if it's not in the way you might think, which is his production, points, rebounds, etc., directly on the basketball floor. That's the final thing I want to throw out there because, again, I know most people want to talk about the here and now and also what it means for this summer, but I think it's also important to remember that, you know, yes, he's overpaid, but this is not a typical overpay in which the GM misevaluated the player. I think Daryl Morey knew what his limitations were, and I think especially defensively why he might not be a candidate to age very well, especially after a neck surgery and that sort of thing. I don't think Daryl Morey misevaluated it. I think he signed Ryan Anderson not just because of what Ryan Anderson would do, but potentially the domino effect and the other moves it could lead to. And by and large, Ryan has done that. So even if it's frustrating to see a $20 million player not in the rotation now, and by the way, I think it's more frustrating to Ryan than anyone, at the same time, I don't want to rewrite history. I think it's important to note that by and large, Ryan has served his purpose to this point. As far as what he will do in the future, there's a couple of routes. He could help you acquire a star this summer if the Rockets are able to talk one into coming. And if not, then he could still be a rotation player for you the next couple of years. Just because he's not now, I'm not convinced that he can't be in the future. Anyway, I think that's enough talk for one Ryan Anderson FAQ show because, well, let's be real. It's more exciting to talk about the players who are currently in the rotation 100% for a team that's going to start Western Conference Finals play next Monday. So for the rest of the week, that's what we're going to do. Just thought we could have one kind of different episode for today's off day, and then we'll get back to the guys who affirmatively are playing and will be out there in Game 1 against the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals next Monday night. For now, though, I appreciate all of y'all for tuning in. You want more from me in the interim, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Ben Dubose, simply my name. The show is on Twitter at LockedOnRockets. Also, don't forget our email, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com, Facebook at Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets or LockedOnRockets.com. Those are all ways to access our content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, inquire about how to become an advertiser, and reach our rapidly growing audience here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the top team in the NBA. Would absolutely love to hear from you. We are here for you, the diehard Rockets community, so if there's any way we can make this show better, don't hesitate to reach out. Also, you want perspective on the Warriors or any other team across the NBA in the playoffs or entering the offseason, or even the NFL or MLB, check out all the other shows across the Locked On Podcast Network. There's a local expert pretty much every team, still growing into Major League Baseball, but certainly for football and basketball, we've got all of that covered, and you can find those wherever you listen to Locked On Rockets, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone. Just search for Locked On, whatever team it may be. Subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, because that's also how we remain viable to advertisers and make the financial model work to be the only daily podcast covering most of these teams. For now, though, I will get some rest. The Rockets are getting some rest, not practicing again until Friday. I could probably use some as well. And, well, folks, I'm sure y'all could as well, especially if you're also an Astros fan and staying up late for some of their West Coast games this week. So, with all that said, thanks again for listening to me here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. And we'll be talking again very soon, previewing that upcoming showdown in the Western Conference Finals with the Golden State Warriors.